Tom, you mentioned on primary night, perhaps insurance commissioner could be like auditor treasurer, you know, winnable for a Republican. Now, do you see any evidence for that, that possibility?
There is some limited evidence that that might happen. And of course, what I'm talking about is something that a vast majority of the voting public has seen and will pay attention to, and that's the insurance rates. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, do the people have a lot of details about, you know, Delaware and the exchanges and who's dropping out of what? And you know, Aetna, you know, dropped out of the vast majority of other states in the health exchange, and Aetna is a major health provider in Delaware. You know, that could worry people. But what does worry people is when they hear that it's hitting their pockets. You know, anywhere from a 20 to 30% rate increase, thanks to this wonderful, trumpeted, you know, awesome solution that is the ACA, or as we love to call it, Obamacare. You know, all of a sudden, that's that hitting people in the pocket like that. And the ability of Republicans to not only point out that people in the middle class working class are going to have a tough time paying for their doctors, but then not maybe even being able to choose their doctors like they'd want to because insurance networks are dropping out. It's created a buzz out there. Now, has Jeff Craig taken advantage of that buzz? You know, do the vast amount of voters know who he is? I'm not sure yet. I know he's trying, but again, with almost all the air sucked out of the room in the presidential race, you know, will he be able to succeed? I don't know. I think we saw the finance guy for a finance job with Ken Simpler 2 years ago. That worked. You know, have we seen an insurance guy for an insurance job with Jeff Craig statewide? I don't know that he's gotten his message out wide enough or could have.
Which begs the question, Darryl, if this was an off-year election race for insurance commissioner, would it be more likely that there was a chance for a Republican like Jeff Craig to hammer home these points about, hey, a 35% increase in insurance rates for Delawareans on the ACA marketplace? If this is 2 years from now or 2 years ago, does that resonate a lot more?
I absolutely think so. I think that, and I have to applaud Tom's optimism because I just don't see it. I think that the momentum from the top of the ticket will benefit Trinidad Navarro and the insurance commissioner's race. I think that for the few people that are paying attention, understand what the insurance commissioner does and
feel the impact.
You know, feel the impact is small. And so, again, the national election raising, the issue of the Affordable Care Act and the challenges associated with the, you know, the law and rates increasing for, you know, a subset of people who are getting their insurance through the exchanges. But it's a small percentage of the overall population. So I just see that I see Trinidad sort of prevailing in this and with a wide margin. I think the other is not having money from a national level to the gubernatorial race. And then Jeff Craig has not raised money
right.
To be able to have an opportunity to define himself, you know, to the voters and to counter any messaging that's coming out of Trinidad's race.
Which I guess is also the same case for the lieutenant governor's race. I mean, there just hasn't been any, I guess, Tom, you can speak to this first. I mean, has anybody even really talked about the lieutenant governor's candidates in this race at all?
You mean for the seat that's been unoccupied for 2 years since Matt Den? It's so important that Matt Den left that seat 2 years ago to become our attorney general, and that seat hasn't been filled. And yes, that job that we haven't had anybody do for the last 2 years, no. I would be shocked and surprised if it got more than a blip of a difference from the governor race to the lieutenant governor race, which is a shame, actually, because they're certainly coming at this from two different perspectives. And it would be interesting to see them run in a year that they could run against each other and get any attention on the race. I think Bethany, as we've seen wisely, Bethany's like the Me Too to John Carney. You know, all of a sudden her signs are tacked along his. And as rightfully she should politically. Do no harm. Don't create any controversy. Don't do anything on the campaign trail that would embarrass yourself or the office. And she'll be just fine. Now, Lamar Gunn is out there saying, hey, you have a choice for lieutenant governor, but who's listening?
Let's talk a little bit about the General Assembly. And Tom, I'll stick with you because, you know, Republicans have hitched their wagon to this young, fresh group of candidates in an attempt to swing the state Senate. Your impressions of how those young candidates have fared so far?
No, I love it. I know it's been working, and I could tell you that because, you know, Eric Razor Schramm, who I love, is a very strident liberal Democrat, had to write a very well-written editorial because the Democrats are fearing that some of these young Republicans are actually gaining traction. And the editorial, and I'll very much paraphrase it, it's like, well, don't vote for these guys just because they're young, because our ideas are better. Well, we'll hold it. People like new, fresh ideas. David Sokolow, at one time, was a younger person in office. Harris McDowell, and I kid Harris, but really, I know it's hard to believe that he was one time younger, but has been in office for so long, you can't picture him as being below 60 in office. No, that is not age discrimination. That is to say that he spent a good amount of time in Dover, and you know, I'm not sure where else. He's not particularly well known throughout the district, throughout the area. He's not hated, but you know, he's become entrenched in Dover. And if that's what you want to continue to vote for, then he'll continue to receive that support. But the Republicans, the young Republicans, are saying, we don't care about the social issues. For a Republican below 40, Roe v. Wade is decided, and decided a long time ago. For a Republican below 40, gay marriage is not on their top 60 things to be concerned about. Those are old arguments by, quite frankly, older people. A lot of the younger Republicans care about their family, about education, about the viability of a middle class. And I think if they can get their message out there, they can be successful. Now, will that be this election cycle? As we've said 3 or 4 or 8 times, it's hard to generate attention with all the air sucked out of the room from the presidential race. I don't know. You know, and this is the type of fresh social approach coupled with more of a fiscal conservatism, managing the money, creating an atmosphere for job growth, and breaking down some of the barriers and constrictions of a 20 to 30 year old education system in Delaware.
Darryl, go ahead. I was going to ask you one other thing about this. I mean, it does, as Tom said, seem like it may not work for Republicans this time, but does it give the Republicans a bench that maybe the Democrats need to catch up on building looking forward the next 2-3 election cycles?
Absolutely. I wanted to commend Tom and the Republicans. I mean, the young millennial, you know, Senate candidates that they've run have done, from what I've heard, a good job. And some indications they've raised money. Mm. At one point I wanted to make, too, that, you know, we talked about during the primary coverage is, you know, Lisa did a very broad-based marketing approach with TV, mm-hmm. and we were other candidates were very micro-targeted. What I've seen in some of the finance reports for the Republican candidates is the use of Twitter and Google and Facebook. And so I think that they're using cost-effective ways to reach, you know, large numbers of voters to try and get their message out, one, to introduce themselves and define themselves and to articulate a message. So I think that there may be some competitiveness in a couple of races. But when you look at, you know, McDowell has 57% registration advantage in D's, and Blevins has money and a 48% Democratic registration in her district. The Sokolow race is one that's a little bit closer. But the one thing I will tell you about Senator Sokolow is that, you know, for someone who's been there for the number of years he has, he doesn't stop learning. You know, he participates not only on a local level, he challenges the status quo, you know, and he's a part of several national organizations that, again, are there to try and define how, you know, where we need to take education and move forward. And so he's a tough one. I mean, I just see him as a progressive voice for education. He's willing to push both sides of the debate and try and advance education for our children. And the last one, you know, that with Carl Pace and Senator Ennis, again, strong registration advantage. So they've picked some tough, you know, districts in which to challenge. If they have the willingness to prevail, you know, sort of through this and continue to build their brand and sort of stay engaged for the next 4 years and go at it again, then they may have some chances. The challenge for Democrats is, as we have aging politicians, is what's that bench look like and what's that transition? So we know Townsend took on Senator DeLuca in sort of a primary. And when you have the numbers that you do on the Democratic side, that's really where we're seeing some of the challenges come from, is actually from within the party, you know, and trying to say, hey, it's time for a change, and having people willing to and brave enough to take on sort of the status quo within the Democratic Party.
Did want to quickly mention the impact a Bethany Hall long win in the lieutenant governor's race could have. We talked about it primary night, that would cause a special election for her Senate seat. From either side, anything new on how that may play out, what kind of candidates we might see? That we can start with you, Darryl, and then go to Tom.
So real quick, I think that the again, when you look at the registration for the Senate seat, there's strong Democratic registration, but in 2014, it was a very close, I think it was a 52-49, well, sorry, I get my numbers wrong, sort of, yeah, no, 52-49 race. It was a very close race, despite having 45% Democratic registration advantage. And I understand, you know, John Marino may be, you know, sort of the guy that steps up for the Republicans. Maybe Tom can speak to that. And I think Representative Jakes is, out of the 22nd, is likely candidate for, you know, for the Democrats. And so I, you know, again, with a 12-9 advantage in the Senate, assuming everything stays status quo, I think there'll be a lot of attention and money raised to see if we can't narrow the gap in that race.
I see, again, Darryl's analysis is being very spot on. But the two races that I think have garnered a lot of attention, at least in my circles, have been the McDowell-Spadola race and then the Meredith-Chapman and the Dave Sokola race. And that's because, you know, one, again, James Spadola has just been a workhorse and a positive attitude, always has a smile on his face campaigner. And Meredith Chapman has been really pressing the education issues against Senator Sokola. Now, I worked with Senator Sokola, and I don't dispute anything Darryl said about him, you know, being very interested in continuing to learn. But will he be seen by the electorate as somebody that's, while he's willing to learn and I think a nice guy, will he be seen as part of the problem? Meredith Chapman picked up the endorsement from the Delaware State Education Association as a Republican challenger, which is, you know, just almost unheard of. Now, you can say, if I was Sokola's people, that means that he's challenging the status quo. So, but that's going to be a very interesting race, I think. And then, so Darryl's right. If it stays the way it is, the open seat for Bethany Hall Long seat is going to be a pretty contested race. If the Republicans pick up one of these seats, or even imagine two seats, I could see the open Senate seat race getting into the easily six figures for a special election on both sides of the aisle, because that is going to be for control, could be for control of the Senate.
Last minute or so we have left. Anything else we should be watching, any other races we should be watching? We'll start with you, Darryl.
I think in the House, I mean, there's the open seat in the 33rd, and I think that when anytime you have an open seat, and again, just looking at registration advantage, you've got a slight registration advantage for the Democrats. It's been held in the past by a Democrat with Bob Walz. Representative Peterman held it for a couple terms, or I think three terms. So I think that's a contested race that we should watch on election night, and see how that turns out. And there may be down in the 41st. I mean, I look at the polling numbers for Trump and the registration, and sort of it depends on the momentum that goes down ticket, right? But the 41st could be another one that that we want to watch on election night as well.
How about you, Tom?
I agree, surprisingly, not surprisingly, again, with Darryl. I think that he's hit those two races. I think I'm very disappointed that there's not more to talk about in the House, but there isn't. You have folks that have been in office, even the new people, 3 to 4 terms, not getting challengers.